listening to The Breakfast Show on Faith FM. This is our second hour of this morning's show. If you missed out on our first hour, let me tell you what we were getting up to. We were looking through Esther chapters 6 and 7, and we were discussing the banquet feast that they had and the plot that was foiled for Haman to try to kill Mordecai, but Haman was hanged himself. If you want to catch up on that part of today's show, then you can do so when the episode is released a little later today on our website or on our app. Go check out our Faith FM app. But coming up in the rest of today's show, we are going to be talking about the death of Dolly Parton at the age of 80. We're going to be interviewing Jennifer Skews about dealing with anger. And also in our encounter with God, we'll be going through 1 Corinthians 16 and talking about stewardship and faithfulness. But right now, we have got our quiz question for this hour. Please produce a shell.
Okay, how many books of the New Testament did the Apostle John write? Quick count in your head and tell me. We have a correct answer from Lindsay. Josh is still counting in his head, but he's getting there. Then, not quite right. Okay, 0491064669. Yes, he's got it right. He was one shy there for a moment, but he's got the right number now.
I'm really right that.
0491064669 is our text line. How many books of the New Testament did the Apostle John write?
Okay, thank you for that quiz question. And guys, I want to be seeing your messages coming in the chat line. And also, nobody sent me in any emojis about Esther and the story there. I want to see some creative emojis, guys.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, let's get into our current affairs for this morning. What are you sharing with us this morning, Josh?
This morning, I'd like to talk about something that's been on my heart for a while.
Yeah.
And this is the best news, I think, for me this year.
What's that?
And it's about the new gambling regulations.
You've been thinking about this for a while?
I've been, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I started to take my son, who's 15 now. We thought we'd just go out into Sydney for the night and stay in a motel. And never been in a motel before, like mm-hmm. stayed overnight. And so what happened is when we got to this motel, as we walked in, I realized that the ground floor, there was a lot of slot machines mm-hmm. and gambling. It was almost like a gambling hall.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that struck me, which was so sad, was there were a lot of tradies. I could tell they were tradies because they were still wearing their uniforms.
Yeah.
And you could tell they just come from work.
Mm-hmm.
And I quickly deduced that they were working away from home and staying by this motel. And most of them had a glass of alcohol in one hand and they were sitting by the slot machines.
Right.
So it got me thinking, I mean, if these guys are married, I mean, did their wives say, hey, there's $400 for you to spend on the slot machines? And I just saw some kind of brokenness
yeah.
that was before me because of the gambling that was happening. And so we went to our room. My son was upstairs on the first floor. And when we got to this room, it was so dingy.
Yeah.
It was really terrible. Then I realized that this whole facility, their main business was the gambling.
Mm.
The motel and the accommodation was just secondary. And so I thought to myself, something has got to change.
Yeah.
And so the new regulations that have come in are really, really phenomenal. The North New South Wales government has brought in some new regulations yesterday about how they'll deal with the gambling problem. And I don't know, have you ever had somebody that you know who has gone through some gambling addiction?
Personally, I don't think I have anyone really close to me that's gone through it. I remember when I was a kid, probably like a 12-year-old or something, my parents would tell me, or like I would overhear my parents' conversations about some workmates of one of them who the wife always went out gambling at the slot machines and stuff like that. And like I think in my family, maybe my granddad used to use like scratchies or something a lot. And I just remember being like, oh, why don't we use scratchies? And my parents were like, because it's a waste of money.
Yeah.
It's like poor stewardship. So like, we're not going to do that. So no, I haven't really seen it really up close and personal, but have you? Like, what have you seen?
Well, before I answer that, how many poker missions do you think we've got in the New South Wales? Poker missions.
In all of New South Wales? Yeah. I don't know, like thousands?
Yeah, how many thousands? Just give me a wild
50,000, I don't know.
We've got 87,000, right?
Bro.
87,000 poker machines across roughly 2,100 clubs and hotels.
Yeah. We used to do a Bible study with a gentleman when we lived in Sydney, and he had a very severe gambling addiction. Mm-hmm. And during COVID, I don't remember what the circumstances were as far as what the lockdowns were, but we obviously weren't in severe lockdowns at the time, but he was still not able to go to gambling facilities.
Yeah.
But he got on a train and came to visit us out this way. And he said when he got here, he's like, oh, because I haven't been able to go to the gambling places, I had enough money to be able to come and visit you guys.
Wow.
And I'm like, a train fare isn't that much, you know, but to think that, yeah,
like 30 because, bucks nice.
Because he wasn't able to spend it, to waste it away, he was able to come and see us. So, yeah.
Wow.
And I know of places that people will just wear diapers because they're too afraid to get up out of their seats because oftentimes when you get up out of your seat, that's when it'll pay out for the next person or whatever. And so, yeah, all of these things, it's very, very sad.
Yeah. I've read about it. And most gambling halls, particularly in the United States, apparently they have to use windows which block out the sun so that you can never tell what time it is.
Yeah, you don't know how much time you've killed.
You have no clue about how much time you've wasted. But personally, I've never had somebody that I know go through a gambling addiction. But one day when I was walking through town, I saw this guy. I think he had lost so much money. He had picked up the stool and was smashing the glass windows and the screens in this gambling place. I could see it as I was walking by and I was thinking, man, that's somebody who's lost a lot of money. And there's a guy in Sydney who lost, the husband lost about $4 million through gambling because he was seriously addicted to this. And then he recovered, but a few months later, he lost $600,000 in 6 months. That's how terrible it is. So here's the good news now. Here's the good news.
Okay.
The good news is the government now has decided to put in some measures to really curb the gambling problem. And one of their measures is there's a single statewide self-exclusion register. So if you know you've got gambling problem, you put your name down in this self-exclusion register.
So you when you're in a moment of clarity, you can put in the form, please don't let me in the doors.
Yes.
And then when you have a moment of weakness and you turn up and they're like, well, actually, no, you're on our exclusion list. You can't come in. Is that what
That's
happens?
Exactly what it is. And they've got face recognition cameras. Good. They'll have face recognition cameras so that when you turn up to a place where there's these machines, it will pick you up and then alert the authorities that this is a guy who's got some challenges and he's included himself in this list that he doesn't want to be allowed to gamble.
That is one of the best things I've actually ever heard.
It is really,
like,
really good.
I can't imagine that the gambling halls are particularly pleased with this because they're losing a lot of money from people who are, you know, repeat customers.
Yes.
By a lot. But now, it's so good for the quality of that person's life.
It is
the government did something good.
The government
what a victory.
This is awesome. But I can also see a few challenges. Imagine when somebody's determined to gamble.
Yeah.
They've put their names down and then they turn up to this place wanting to gamble and then they're
There's
told,
a lot
no.
of online gambling that can still be accessed.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. That's so true. Mm. And so, again, the Wesley Mission is actually challenging that these measures are not enough, right? There could still be some good things that can be done to really make sure that this whole industry is curtailed in terms of the impact that it has on people. And but it's really good. It's a good step, you know, towards really helping people with addictions and gambling. One thing that I've never really understood is the advertisements I've seen on TV or on radio. They always put this fine print at the end where they say, gamble responsibly.
Yeah, whatever that thinking, means. How can you do that? That's an oxymoron.
It's an oxymoron, you know. Yeah. Gamble responsibly, waste responsibly. How can you waste responsibly?
Because be a poor steward responsibly.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah, nah. It's, you know, but then when you look at the connection that this story has for me, particularly on a spiritual level, it talks about being, you know, a brother's keeper.
Yeah.
the government has realized the challenge that is gambling is presenting to families. And so it reminds me of Cain and Abel, when Abel was trying to look after his brother because he was going down a wrong path, but Cain slew Abel, and then God asked him, "Why? Where is your brother?" And he answered God and saying, "Am I my brother's keeper?" In this case, I think the government has done a good thing to look after people.
But like you said, these extra guardrails are not enough.
Yep.
What people truly need if they're experiencing addiction is a change of heart. They need transformation, and that transformation can only come from Jesus. And so, hey, listener, if you are experiencing any form of addiction, whether it's gambling or whether it is alcohol or whether it is explicit content or food, if you're just a food junkie and you eat way too much ice cream at night, whatever it might be for you, the only thing that is going to fill the hole in your heart that you're trying to fill with the various addictions is actually Jesus. It's actually the Holy Spirit transforming your heart little bit by little bit, day by day, and drawing you nearer to God. When you're abiding in Christ, you are fulfilled and you actually don't need those addictions.
Amen.
And that is the only thing that's going to save you.
This is so good, Alinza, because God works in us from the inside out. And everything else that man is trying to do is try to work on people from the outside in. It does not give a long-lasting victory. But when we allow the Spirit of God to work in our hearts, we have victory, because he puts in us an enmity to the things that we are addicted to, but he also gives us a power to resist them and to overcome them. And so Christ is the answer to all these addictions and any other challenges that humanity may face. So that was my story for today, and it was really good.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
We have a quiz answer, please, Producer Shell. What's that quiz answer?
The quiz answer was
five
books. List them for me. List them.
Okay, so we've got the Gospel of John, and 1st and 2nd and 3rd John, and Revelation.
Yippee! I was living out Revelation. Can you imagine?
Yeah. No, I don't know if you can see my scribble there, but I started writing a 4, but I turned it into a 5.
That's a very good correction there.
Yep. You're used to seeing scrolls, so you didn't think too much of it, did you?
Yes, usually a lot of scribble coming from the from in here. I do prefer the texting.
Oh, dear. Just got to squint while I show what I've written. Okay. Yeah.
Hey, that song that we just got to listen to was another song that was written by Dolly Parton.
Really?
Yeah, The Master's Hand, which is, relays a bit about Noah's journey and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and their experience and how, they were clinging to the Master's Hand. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. And she wrote well over 3,000 songs.
3,000?
Yeah. She was an incredible songwriter.
My goodness. Yeah. That is amazing. Wow. What else do you want to share with us about Dolly Parton?
This is supposed to be your segment. I'll jump in.
But you're the big fan in the room. I just know about her.
I grew up listening to her from very, very young. There's a family home video of my sister and I both singing Me and Little Andy, which was one of her famous songs, which is not theologically correct. You definitely want to get our book on death instead of listening to the message of that particular song.
She was a Christian. She didn't have the same beliefs exactly on all the things that we
do. Yeah. So it's a song about a little boy and his dog that go to heaven.
Oh, okay.
But my sister and I, we grew up with that song and loved it. And my sister was 18 months older than me. And so she sang the song with the little mic that was connected to, because back in that day, you still had to have like a whole cable mic to hold for your video camera. And so she sang the whole song. And then I came on and sang my little bit. And I was much younger. And I was holding a beater in one hand.
A beater, like an egg beater?
An egg beater.
Cute.
Yeah, licking the cake batter that my mom had been making.
Wow.
And the microphone and the microphone in the other hand. I'm singing Late One Cold Stormy Night.
I love the song.
And then I accidentally got confused and I licked the microphone. But yes, that's my earliest memory, I guess, of Belly. But so, yeah, we obviously knew the song pretty well at that age. But yeah, a lot of her songs have made some lasting impressions, especially obviously for me nowadays, you know, her religious stuff and things, you know. She has a huge variety of songs that I wouldn't recommend, you know, very, very like immoral sort of songs, you know. But a lot of really good things as well. She put out an album just for the children's hospital. Mm-hmm. She's put out, you know, so all of the songs that are on that were just for children to be strong and to make it through their battles while they are going through sickness. You know, she's done a lot of amazing work.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I do love her, but I think that the song that she's very clever lyricist, you know. Yeah. I mean, her song 9 to 5, you know, I pour myself a cup of ambition, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's just a very, very clever line, even though I don't recommend having coffee.
No.
You know, but yeah, very well written, and she was a very clever person. But her song that she has about the golden streets of glory, and it says in there, I hope my feet are clean enough to walk upon the golden streets of glory.
Oh, wow.
Wonderful.
Yeah. There you go. Wow, but
I do think that in an interview that she had many years ago, she said somebody asked her, what do you want people to be saying about you 100 years from now? And she said, man, she looks good for her age.
She really cared about her appearance.
She did very much.
I've seen little snippets of interviews of hers over the years, just like on shorts on YouTube or whatever like that, and they've come through. And something that always struck me about her was, like, you know, her big hair and her big outfits and just like the way that she wanted to present herself, like compared to where she's come from, because I don't know how much you guys know about her background. Like, she was born in East Tennessee in the mountains to a family with 12 children. And, like, they...
Very, very poor.
Very poor. Her dad was a laborer. Her mom was a homemaker. Very resourceful and able to make everything stretch and feed all these
kids. That's where we get the song Code of Many Colors.
Yeah, exactly, because she was being... teased at school because she had a coat made up of a multicolored...
Rags.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what she went to school in. And so her mom told her, no, don't worry about that.
And the song is all true, because she came home crying because she'd been being bullied and picked on at school for her outfit, for her coat. And her mom explained to her the story of Joseph in the Bible and his coat of many colors.
Yeah, exactly.
And so she went back to school and she's trying to tell them, oh, but you got to know about this story. And they didn't understand and they still picked on her.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Wow.
It was special to her.
Yeah.
She seemed to have a lot of – sorry, Lindsay. She seemed to have a lot of passion in terms of doing things for children.
Oh, very much.
Because in England, I remember she gave away a lot of books. And so kids would just go to the library and get free books, and they were being given out by one of the foundations, you know. And it was, I remember my nephews going to get, they had stash of, you know, of reading books, and it was a good thing that she did for the community.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's done a lot of cool things. Yeah, she was the only person in her family to finish high school. And then her uncle gave her her guitar, I think when she was 10 years old. And so her uncle, who believed in her, gave her that opportunity to begin her songwriting career at a very early age. And so after she finished high school, she went off to Nashville. Because after, like, when she was in high school, they asked her, what are you going to do? Like, they asked all the kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? And she stood up, she said, I'm going to be a star. And so that's exactly what she did. So she
was
off,
a very ambitious person.
Yeah, lots of ambition. And look, it worked well for her.
It did. She was probably like entrepreneur woman, you know, probably one of the biggest ones, because she was so lovable and so determined.
Yeah.
And yeah, she knew how to talk to people who were trying to take advantage of her or whatever. You know, she may have sometimes come across like a bimbo, but she was very intelligent.
She has a
song. She was very smart.
About being a dumb blonde, but being anybody's fool.
That's right. She's like, there's a brain under this wig.
Exactly. There was also a time where she was working working with one of her producers. What was his name? I've forgotten his name. But basically, there was a bit of tension behind closed doors between Wagner.
Was it Peter Wagner?
Yeah.
Peter
Wagner or somebody
I'm saying
Wagner.
His name wrong now, too.
Wagner.
But yeah.
Parton.
Porter Wagner.
Porter Wagner. Sorry. That's the one. So he was 19 years older than her, and like it was a professional relationship. She was married and had a very happy marriage up until last year her husband passed away. But so this guy who was producing and had her on his show, there was a bit of like control that seemed to be coming through. And she was signed up for 5 years to work with him. And she was like, I don't want to work for this guy anymore. And she kept wanting to leave, and he kept not allowing her to leave. And eventually she expressed herself in a song.
I will always love you.
I will always love you. And people think that this is a breakup song romantically, but this is a breakup song that she wrote for her boss. And when she sat him down and said, hey, I have a song I want to play for you. As she began to sing the song to him, he broke down crying. He knew it was about them. And at the end, he's like, you're allowed to leave. It's okay.
Yep.
Wow. Like, what a beautiful feminine way about going about that.
Yep.
Like, he wouldn't allow her to leave. And then she spoke to his heart instead.
Yeah.
And that is what broke through.
Obviously, that song became most famous when Whitney Houston sang it.
Yes.
But that was, yeah, Dolly's, she sang that many, many times in many albums. And, yeah.
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 What a powerful story. Lady. The thing that stood out to me in this interview that I saw, she talked about, you know, I come from this backwoods part of Tennessee, and people like to judge you on the way that you dress. But you know what? I'm just me, and I want to wear my big wigs, and I want to wear my big flashy clothes, and I'm just going to be myself. This is who I am. This is how I'm going to express myself. I just really loved her authenticity. Yes. Like, she was just over the top, but she loved it, and that's all that really mattered to her. And I see value in that kind of self-expression.
That's right. There's definitely a bunch of aspects of who Dolly was that I would not say would be very role model-y,
no.
But there was a bunch of things about her that was, you know, as far as, yeah, she was a very kind person, and as well as very business savvy and smart.
Yeah. What a gift. And she often took herself so unseriously in her business, especially early on, because she just felt like people were gifting her the life that she had. That's the way she expressed it.
You know, I'm just realizing that maybe I'm representing the brothers here. I don't know much about Dolly Parton, you know. And I'm hearing the ladies talking about her and all that she did. So I think I would like to hear if there's any brother out there who listens to Dolly Parton or something. Because I have no clue of, you know, any of her songs. I'm just learning about her right now.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
Now we are going to be having an interview with Jennifer Skews. Welcome, Jen. How are you going today?
I'm going very well, thank you.
Oh, that's excellent.
It's a beautiful day.
It is. The sun is shining. You know what? When I came into the studio this morning, it was pitch black outside, so I'm glad that there is daylight out there right now.
Oh, right.
Welcome to the show. It is great to have you on. So I heard we're going to be talking about how to deal with anger. What did you want to share with us about that today?
Well, first of all, I've been talking a lot about emotions, and we actually get on what I call the emotional roller coaster. And a lot of people that I see, or even people I know, and even with myself, I find when emotions take over and we get out of control, life is not good. We make mistakes, we make bad choices, we react in ways that we drive people away from us. It's like a brick wall we present, and it's one of the most potent emotions that we can have. So I thought it'd be good to have a look at that. I still learn a lot, and I'm still learning about anger particularly. And I think one of the things that prompted me is what happens on the road. We have a lot of road rage.
Yeah, we do.
And it doesn't take much for people to react on the road. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking a lot more about, well, why do we get so angry? What is it really about? So I don't know what your thoughts are. Why would you get angry, or why do you think others get angry?
What, on the road or just in general?
Anywhere.
Well, look, from my understanding of things, it's a response in our bodies and in our brains that lets us know that there's something that's not right and that needs to be dealt with.
Yes, and often it's about control. What can I have control over? And I've noticed that I get angry, and there are degrees of anger. We can get frustrated, annoyed, impatient, and then as it builds, we end up expressing or feeling the intensity of that anger.
Mm.
And it is very destructive if we don't deal with it. And it's usually because I can't control something, I've noticed. Like at home, I'm on my own, but I have a cat, and he can be very annoying. And I find if he does that and I can't control it, I get frustrated and then I get angry with him.
Man, the poor cat.
but it's all right. We kiss and make up, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I've noticed that it's when I can't control something, I start feeling angry.
Yeah.
So what is it we want to control? What is it, not just me, but you and other people in life, people listening, what is it we want to have control over, or what or who? Do you think?
Yeah, no, that's a really excellent question. I've been thinking about this recently because sometimes, like, I get a bit anxious when I'm not able to be in control of a situation, and I try to make things suit me, and I try to manipulate the situation. Even though I'm trying really hard not to be manipulative, it still comes out. So that's kind of more what I do instead of getting angry usually. But we're always trying to be in control of something, and we feel scared if we're not in control. Isn't that right?
And yes, and I find we want to control other people in our life, and that might be, well, certainly I just mentioned road rage.
Yeah.
You know, and I've noticed I've had a couple of incidents recently on the road, and people, if I'm on the, what they call the fast lane, I'll be doing the maximum speed, and I'll have someone come up menacingly from behind me. And what they do, they'll come up and they're not meant to, but they'll tailgate me, and I have one guy swerving behind me, and I couldn't get over. When I got over, he just went ballistic, and I could see him yelling and carrying on and moving through. So he wanted to go somewhere in a hurry, and I was blocking him even though we were doing the legal speed limit.
Yeah.
So this is the sort of thing I find. And people, you know, it's one of the common ones, people who come and see me say, oh, I get so angry on the road. There's silly idiots out there. They do this and they do that. So it's about not being able to control what's really happening, right? If we can't control our children, family members, friends, people at work, there's all sorts of situations. You know, people make mistakes. If you're a bit of a perfectionist, you get angry and annoyed because it's not right. Right?
Yeah. Or not the version of right.
That's it. It's what we believe and what we experience and see. Now, the angry, we can get angry with ourselves. Mm-hmm. Like I do. I get angry with myself sometimes, and I'm learning not to do that.
Okay.
It's because we make mistakes. We're not perfect. And that's evident when you read the Bible. You can see we all have fallen natures, and part of that is when we'll never get it perfectly right, even if we want it to.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do you get angry with yourself at times?
I think I get frustrated, but not like full-blown anger. Generally. Lindsay, why'd you have to do that? And I kind of like cringe at myself. You know, I'll have a memory that comes back after a while. I'll be like, oh, that's so weird. Like, why'd you do that? But then I move on.
And we talk to ourselves then and tell ourselves off. And, you know, and I've had to, I mean, one of the messages I had when I was growing up with is, you know, you're stupid. And I don't know where that came from. And I do that. You're so stupid. And I have to reframe it and go, no, what you did was a stupid thing, but you're not stupid.
What?
Yeah, I've got lots of evidence to show.
Stupid.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. So we put labels on ourselves out of frustration, annoyance, out of our anger. And one of the things I find that we tend to do is we let anger build up. We don't know that we're starting to get angry. And we might be doing things and that frustration is building, and then something tips that edge and we then let fly. We might be yell at someone. We might, you know, beat ourselves up. There's all sorts of things we do. And we go, why am I so angry? So the other question is, where did it come from? Why did we get so angry? When did that all start?
Mm. Yeah. What was the trigger for that building up in that moment? Yeah.
Yes.
Can I ask a question? Is there any evidence to show that, like, men and women experience anger the same way, or that men and women experience anger in different ways? I'm just curious about that. Do you know?
That's a good question. We have a range of emotions.
Yeah.
Men are allowed to get angry. They grow up. It's okay for a man to be angry, whether it's in the sporting arena or at home or wherever. But women, I was brought up in an era where women did not get angry. They weren't allowed to show their anger.
Right.
So, but nowadays I find a lot of young women get very, very angry.
Yeah.
And they find a lot of, even road rage is to do with young women, and it's just about control, what they can't control.
Yeah.
So it varies, but women's emotions are more intense and more rapid.
Yeah.
And we have an emotional brain that thinks rapidly. It's like we've got all these connections, left, right, brain, that go back and forth. So we do a lot more thinking and feeling. We have a bigger range of feelings, whereas men have less feelings and they're more specific.
Yeah. Because what I've noticed in myself, like, because I did get angry a little bit recently with a particular person, and I sat there for a while letting the anger build, and I was just like mentally like justifying why this person is someone I should be angry at, and not like I'm not going to be physically violent with this person, but I was thinking, how can I make this person like, this is a very sinful thought process, obviously, but I'm sharing openly and authentically to show, you know, we all go through this. Like, I was sitting there thinking, like, how can I make this person look bad, essentially, in a very sophisticated way? And I think that's what women typically do, because we are more verbal in our processing. We have this society where typically women are not allowed to express aggressively, but we're much more manipulative and able to shame others. We're a lot better at that.
Yeah. We blame and shame.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's often what anger is about. We blame.
Yeah.
But it comes from a very deep source. And because we're born with a range of emotions, they're genetically programmed, anger being one of them, and it's actually to protect us. It's not to be used to be destructive.
Yeah.
It's fear and anger and anxiety, I believe, God has given us to protect us from harm. But it's sort of like the protection mechanism's gone wrong as we go in life. And then when we're born, we have models, and if we have an angry parent,
yeah.
You know, I've had many people come and see me, oh, my father or my mother, they were so angry all the time. So either we go the other way and we never want to get angry and we just put up with everything, or we become like them. The models can dictate. But usually it's based on rejection and emotional pain that is suppressed. And then we get depressed. Is one of the things, but then under the anger can be the pain and depression, right? So anger is like a cover. So when that happens, that person has anger that isn't just about some frustration in the present. It's a very deep-seated anger. And we see that particularly around the world. You know, you have a look at the atrocities and things that go on, and they're very anger-driven.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So this is where for some people there has to be a much deeper healing for their anger, and they need to have a look at their history and start to redo those beliefs they have.
Mm.
You know, that's what you said. You were wrestling with those beliefs and thoughts.
Yeah, definitely. So for a person who, like, if they look back at their parents and their grandparents, like, on, and they can see, like, a pattern of anger in that family, how can a person put an end to that cycle? What can they do to move forward in a more peaceful way?
Well, just recognizing it is a big step forward. Instead of going, why am I so angry, and, you know, or not even realizing they have the problem, to look at that and go, I'm doing the same thing. So recognizing it, accepting it, and then looking at what can I do to change it? What can I do about it? Because we always have choices. Again, you know, that scenario you were telling me, you were going through your choices about who it was, what it was, how you can deal with it. Yeah. So, and anger and all emotions are not just in the mind, they're actually in the body.
Yeah. Yeah. So I remember that day I was shaking. I went and spoke to some people afterwards and I was telling them what I thought and I was like, this is terrible. And I was physically shaking and I couldn't calm myself down. I had to go for a big long walk and then I saw a friend and we prayed and I had a hug and then I was mostly calm. I was like, my body, I am so not regulated right now. I need to deal with this. This is not good.
Well, that's an excellent example, and that's when it gets out of control.
Yeah.
But it is very physical and it's adrenaline and cortisol driven. So this is where we need to do something like you did. And I find the first thing is prayer. The power of God's love and prayer is so important because, you know, when we invite the Spirit in, ask God to help us to deal with this anger and do some breathing, some deep breathing and slowly let it out, calm the heart rate down, even rubbing the heart area and breathing and paying attention to it. Because when the heart calms down, the mind calms down.
Mm.
So if we regulate the heartbeat, like go for that walk, it spill off the adrenaline.
Yeah.
All right. And it's
get it out of your system physically destructive kind of way, like do it in a way that's not going to hurt anyone or anything.
Well, that's right. And some of the early anger techniques to release anger was to, you know, get a pillow or something and punch it, or a stick and hit something solid.
Yeah.
But that actually makes it worse because you're only spilling off that energy. You're not actually resolving the problem.
So some of the types of breathing we can do, is that like a box breathing? Like
the box breathing.
4 seconds in, 4 second hold, 4 seconds out.
Yep.
Four second hold. Yeah.
Because when you breathe and you do something like the counting and breathing, what is happening is that the mind is no longer racing with those thoughts of anger, right? It's now focused on counting and what the body's doing.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing these thoughts on how to deal with anger. We've really appreciated you sharing that with us today. Do you have one final, like one sentence kind of thought that you want to share with people?
Well, you always have choices, and to step back and calm the body down and be what we call mindful, and then write down what you're angry about and process it and keep breathing, and that will help.
Oh,
and pray.
Awesome.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.